from implementation of legislation with specific legislation that we are responsible for. So you will excuse us that we haven't really populated to a full extent in respect of the general human rights. So we went straight into the domestication of the UNCRC. However, where possible, I will give a report as to the elements of constitutional development and human rights questions might be raised. I'm going to cover basically the relevant articles that we will respond to in respect of the CRC. I won't go to the Constitution because that has been said by several admins already. We are going to deal as well with the various interventions, progressive achievements, and limitations experienced with respect to the digital legislation that we are responsible for. I'll deal with that right at the end of the presentation. We'll look at issues of capacity building to see if we do have the capacity to deliver or to implement the legislation that we are responsible for that actually entrenches the UNCRC. We will also look at the various interventions that we have embarked upon around issues involving children. And here we have gone a little bit further than the report that we had already submitted in September to cover the period of December. We'll also look at institutional mechanisms to protect and promote the rights of children. The department has already alluded by Dr. September participated in the compilation of the report through submission and participation in various activities and workshops that were held to compile and consolidate the report. We also basically partnership with the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities in respect of implementation of other aspects of children's rights such as HIV and AIDS that we did not really report to the fullest in our report. So I will allude to that. I will just highlight that issue. I will go straight into the relevant articles on like 7 relevant articles that the department would like to respond to in respect of rights that we have basically domesticated through the various pieces of legislation. The department has particular programs that look at the mentioning and the protection of the rights contained in Article 3, the best interest of the child, Article 16, protection of privacy and protection of the image of the child. We also have Article 7, which looks at access to information from a diversity of sources and protection from material harmful to children's well-being. We also look at the Article 21 that looks at the national and inter-country adoption matters through the involvement of one chief director that looks at the best interest of the child. We also have a responsibility to implement Article 27 through recovery of maintenance for the child, as well as Article 29 and 29 in abuse and neglect in using physical and psychological recovery. These articles, we have highlighted the number of statutes that give effect to these articles, as well as programs that make sure that we are progressively implementing the obligations set out in the CRC. In addition to the primary legislation that we are responsible for as the Health Department, we also participate fully and support fully all the other departments according to our primary mandate of delivering justice by making sure that we enforce the legislation that are emanating from other departments. If we look at the best interest of the child, we've mentioned the issues related to children, and it can be seen by the fact that we have the Chief Directorate Promotion of the Rights of Vulnerable Groups dealing with the rights of the best interest of the child. We have the court operations that ensures that courts are child friendly. We have our facilities management units that also make sure that we actually have facilities that are child friendly. We have a chief directorate family advocate office that basically deals with issues of the best interest of the child in divorce matters, as well as looking at other issues that have come with the children's health. So we really do have a number of units that are dealing with the issues of children, and I believe that the new branch that has just been established or increased or upgraded, the constitutional development and human rights branch is going to look at the CRC in a more comprehensive way and as a focal point for coordination of the rights of the child. Section 28 of the Constitution emphasizes that the rights of the child are paramount, and we have seen through Section 7 of the Children's Act being basically actually implemented by the judiciary through emphasizing salient features of this best interest in areas where it sounded like the ugly matters. The one case that we can allude to is the case of, I'm going to look at the case of Machiso, the last case, which is a significant case, Machiso versus Road Accident Fund, where a child was adopted but in a customary manner, and when the child came as a beneficiary, the Road Accident Fund sought to say that he doesn't qualify because he was not adopted through a civil process. And the court here held that customary, the fact that he was adopted customarily showed that he was a dependent of the deceased and therefore entitled to payment in terms of the Road Accident Fund. That is significant because it means that the law, the judiciary is really taking the principle of the interest of the child to heart and applying it from the perspective of what would be best for the child in the particular situation. So a broader interpretation of dependence was basically adopted. And if you look at the amplification of Section 7 of the Children's Act, case of AD and another versus DW and another, you already see from the way we title the case that we are already giving effect in terms of how we title our cases, that we're already implementing Article 16 to make sure that the identity of the child is protected at the foremost. Here the court really entrenched the principle of the best interest of the child as a general principle that must inform the judiciary in dealing with matters involving children. So if parties have and mom are fighting and there are technical issues that may delay the finalization of the case, the judicial, the artificial features that should be followed to make sure that the child's interest is basically protected. So we apply the law in making sure that the interest of the child is protected. We have a number of issues that we have implemented through the Children's Act. The Chief Director of Family Advocates is responsible basically for ensuring primarily that the best interests of the child are taken into consideration in divorce matters. And this is not, it's a feat for the department because it's a whole chief directorate that just deals with one issue, divorces. However, the responsibilities of the family advocate have been increased in that they are now implementing mandatory mediation in cases where fathers of children born out of wedlock seek custody or where there are disputes with fathers of children born out of wedlock. Then we need that to use alternative justice or alternative dispute resolution to ensure that all the issues are dealt with outside of the court, because we know that court processes can be pretty much long. So that is very critical to ensure that we speedily deal with matters relating to children. The family advocate also is highly responsible for making sure that parental responsibilities and agreements are developed in cases where there are disagreements, especially in matters relating to divorce. As you are aware, there is a growing need to basically make sure that we have parental plans when parties in a divorce are really passing away, because without that it becomes difficult. The party who basically has custody ultimately has the ultimate control and drives over the child over and above the party who is merely maintaining. However, with parental plans, the parents have the responsibility to discuss issues relating to the child development and, you know, all other interests of the child. We also are increasingly using the family advocate to resolve issues for in family group conferences. This process, which is an alternative dispute resolution process, is another process that is aimed at ensuring that we really keep issues relating to the interest of the child out of court as much as possible. If parties can, through mediation, reach a settlement, then you find that the settlement is now lodged in court rather than in parties who are fighting over the rights, over the child being in court and really putting the child in a process. I'm on page 9. Article 3, best interest of the child. Mm-hmm. something. We also, in terms of the distribution of our family advocates, we've got our statistics set out in page 10, which shows the distribution of our family advocates. We believe that these numbers will increase over a period of time as we are implementing the Children's Act progressively. The Children's Act provides that we have to protect the privacy of girls that have undergone virginity testing by preventing disclosures of results thereof without the consent of the child. And Section 13.1b guarantees the privacy of a child's health status, e.g. HIV/AIDS. Our court will definitely insist on protecting these rights. There is also a critical section that I did not include here that also has a bearing on protection of the privacy of the child and the image of the child. Section 61 of the Children's Act also basically says that children under the age, actually all children must give evidence by an intermediary. What it means is that then the child would automatically have to be in a separate testifying room when they give evidence. So that's how we give effect to protection of privacy and image of the child. In terms of the child justice, we all know that the child justice has basically brought a drastic change in the way we look at dealing with the issues of children. The use of Section 53.5 states that the media or any other person is prohibited from attending proceedings involving children unless they apply for in order to be present in such a proceeding. A similar provision exists in the Women's Rights Act and it is independent. The Criminal Procedure Act, basically in terms of Section 178, provides for the child to give evidence in camera. Basically, the reason why is that we believe that the child might not be able to provide evidence in the gallery, open gallery, as the child might tend to experience trauma or extreme trauma that would enable him to provide proper evidence in court. So this section is implemented to the fullest, and we are responsible for ensuring that this happens within the promotion of the rights of vulnerable groups. We have capacitated the court with quite a number of intermediaries. The numbers are not sufficient, but we believe that we will progressively increase these numbers. Currently we've got 92 adult intermediaries, meaning that it's intermediaries that are called on an as and when basis. And we've got 156 contract intermediaries who are basically funded by the Department of Justice, and 210 social workers from the Department of Social Development and NGOs who provide intermediary services in court. I should mention, if this fact is not here, that the Department of Justice is currently going through a process to see how we can establish permanent posts of intermediaries so that we are totally responsible for providing this service and not dependent on social development. The reason we have taken this route is we are aware that we need social workers to divide the quantity and the evidence of our work. We have established 220 testifying rooms, meaning that out of the 587, out of all the courts that we have in, yeah, in South Africa, we have these 220 testifying rooms. A bit of a challenge that we have here is that we, most of our courts are national monuments. So they cannot be adapted, we cannot put modifications to them to make sure that we have testifying rooms. However, we have just recently conducted an audit of the number of facilities that we have, and we, through the Sexual Offence Support Project, will be forced to incrementally make sure that the courts have testifying rooms. My page is page 12, and you've got a double-headed page, but it's slide 12. So, I'm going to try and be fast. Can I give an additional 2 minutes to wrap up? In terms of Article 17, I'm going to highlight the areas that we are focusing on. In terms of the Criminal Law, Sexual Offences and Related Matters Act, slide 13, Section 19 creates a punishable offence where a person exposes or displays private card or pornography to children. So these provisions are being implemented, and as I had alluded before, the child, when they come to court, they have special services to enable them to provide us with evidence. I'm going to skip Article 7, which basically talks to the measures that we have put in place to ensure that the child has access to information. We have gone a step forward to also develop our materials on child justice and children's act in brain form, and we are basically going out to schools where there are children with disabilities to make sure that they also have access to this information. The department, as you, somebody asked earlier on, is responsible for provision of maintenance through the Maintenance Act. We are responsible also for international recovery of maintenance for children. Currently, if you look at slide 16, 17, up to slide 21, we have a project which is a project that is a priority project for our DG on a turnaround strategy for accessing for children to access maintenance. A key part of that strategy called Operation Karamunda, meaning that support children, is that we have committed to not having any case they be in court for more than 3 months. So there must be a resolution of maintenance issues within a period of 90 days. Challenges, probably you know more about the child register and the national register for sex offenders. These are, both of them are looking at prevention of abuse of children, and there is a process in place to try and match the CFC and the NRSO, as we have realized that the cost of establishing the register in Nomadland. For budgetary consideration, we have decided that the two registrars be mentioned. And I think the advocacy from Parliament has already sent on both of our departments, and we are following the request from Parliament to basically match the two registrars. I'm going to skip most of those presentations and go to the public education and awareness campaign to say that the department has really done a lot of activities focusing on children. But the one that I think you need to be aware of is our concern around child pregnancies and pregnancies of school girls. And the intersectoral committee on the management of sexual offences gave a directive that the department, the intersectoral departments, must implement the project once focusing on prevention of abuse of children, because if a child under the age of 13 is pregnant, automatically by legislation there is abuse. And therefore we have done extensive campaigns that are started in the previous 2011 and are continuing around the country to raise awareness so that children understand how they are groomed to be party to sexual abuse and to identify anyone when a person is grooming them to engage in inappropriate sexual relationships. I will now speak to the challenges. We've got quite a number of intersectoral committees that we participate in. These are, you know, increasingly being demanded through our legislation, and they are being implemented. We provide annual reports on child justice, and we will be now providing annual reports on the implementation of the Sexual Offences Amendment Act, and therefore Parliament will have access to these before the end of the by the new financial year. So those institutions and intersectoral committees are institutional mechanisms to monitor the implementation of laws that protect children. We have experienced some major challenges with the implementation of some of our legislation, and it is page 36, Chair. Challenges are on page 36.
Unfortunately, we have to stop here.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jesus, and thank you for the opportunity, and thank you very much for the presentation. I just quickly wanted to go back to the mention about the child protection register. In fact, when we were preparing ourselves for these meetings last week, we had a lady from one of the child welfare organizations that came before us, and when I spoke to her, she told me that when she used to employ people to work in her NGO to look after vulnerable children, it took her 18 months to get the clearance from that child protection register. She had applied to see whether the people are vetted and can work in her institution, and it took 18 months. Somebody else told us that it took 3 months. Now, am I to understand that because of the budgetary constraints that this process is not working? Because I believe in line with the Act, it should take 21 days for a person to be able to get that information about whether a person is on the child protection register or not. And then secondly, we also had a presentation by the people from the Child Institute at UCT, and they said to increase conviction rates, that we send strong messages to perpetrators we need courts that are child-friendly and understand the needs of a child. So basically the assumption was that courts are not child-friendly, and I just wanted to get your opinion on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeanette. On slide 7, I just want to know where does the implementation of the charge fit in the second one? Civil society. During last week, the department told us that the statistics of children who commit offenses is problematic, maybe based on various reasons. How was this? Thank you, Jeanette.
Thanks for the presentation. I just want to know from the department, why is the legal written on the special court procedure in place to ensure that protection of children as victims and witnesses in the justice system? If South Africa complies with the UN guidelines on the treatment of victims and witnesses, then surely this should be mentioned in the country's report. On the implementation of the Convention of the Rights of the Child. Thank you.
Thank you. The minimum age of criminal capacity, according to the UN, started 20. And we are still at 10. When are we going to comply? And so will be. This is not a question, but I think it's information that is not included in the CRC, which mentioned the positive impact of law on children in prison after the implementation of the child justice. I think that's a very information that should be included in the
Thank you very much, Chairman. I've got one question. Slide 28, I think it's page 14 of your presentation, speaks to trafficking in prisons and the clear statistics in the drug CRC.
it must be a way that they are the ones that are delaying the reporting committee because of not sending the Department of Human Services. So you could help us and get this information. Because the intention is just to finish it up on the 15th of July of June. So if there's any delay, Department of Justice will be one of the departments who are responsible for the delay of the report. Thank you.
Thank you for that. But once more, thank you very much for your presentation. We hope that you're going to see the next program will be the Department of Health. We will have the Department of Health presentation followed by Department of Labor and then
particular that we relevant. One is that children have a right to life, survival and development, and government should ensure that children survive, develop and help you. Different backgrounds to talk about in South Africa. And then also mentioned that humanity is not being challenged by the global future, as reflected in the Millennium Development Goals adopted by the United Nations in 2000. And the target there was that all countries must reduce by 2/3 the number of children who die before the age of 5. And this can be achieved, I think, as all of the members know, by 2050. We've got about 1,000 days on the commitments to reach these targets in terms of the MDGs. Rates have been unacceptably high, not just in South Africa, but in sub-Saharan Africa as a whole. And mortality rates in sub-Saharan Africa, I think, is more than skyrocketing in the early to mid-1990s. Due largely to the escalation of HIV and AIDS, which may contribute to the challenge. In South Africa, the rate started to decrease in the mid to late 2000s due to the relapse of programs, especially the HIV program and the prevention of modern child transmission program. And this is reflected in data reported by international bodies such as UNAIDS, UNICEF, and local civil organizations like the Medical Research Council. Column table shows the mortality rates for children of different ages for different time periods. And I think what you want to show here on the chair this slide is that against the targets we had set for ourselves in 2014 as a department, we by 2011 had reached 2 of them. And that is reduction in the under 5 mortality rate from 56,500 in 2009 to 42 in 2011 against the target rate set of 30 by 2014. So we've seen a 10% reduction of under 5 mortality in 3 years. With respect to infant mortality, we've seen again another 10% reduction from 14,000 to 13,000 against the target of 2014 of 36,000. The challenge we still have is neonatal mortality, and this is mortality within 28 days after being born. And there, as you can see from the chair, we're still not doing very well. In 2009, it was 14,000, in 2011, it was 14,000, and the target was 12,000. And I'll come to what interventions we're putting in place. Looking at maternal mortality, we've been reporting quite variable figures. And the 2008 figure that we reported was a scale of 10 births, 100,005 births. The target we are setting for 2014 is 270,005 births. We don't have the figures for 2010 and 2011. We are currently through the Human Sciences Research Council doing a survey that will give us good, better quality data on maternal mortality. But what we do know from the confidential inquiry on maternal mortality is that the institution of maternal mortality is still occurring. We don't know what's happening in humans, which is a big challenge. We will know from the survey results that the HSRC gives us, hopefully within the next 2 months. So you can see it's a bit of a mixed picture, but the trend at least for underlying mortality is still in terms of what the minister and the ministry has done, as I think honourable members know, we've had three committees established to make sure from outside the department in place over a very long period of time. So the Confidential Inquiry into the Maternal Mortality Committee was established in 1996 by the late Minister Montoshola Matsima. And she, in fact, also established the other two committees, the Perinatal Mortality Committee and the Committee on Child Mortality. These committees report every 3 years, and then they give interim reports annually. These reports also tell us, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, why children die. The major causes of child mortality is really about fire. And with the biggest contributor being HIV infection. So about 40% of all child deaths under 5 or 4 years are associated with HIV. Then you have newborn conditions like prematurity, asphyxia, infection, pneumonia, diarrhea, and TB is another major cause of mortality. And then you have malnutrition, which is again causing quite a few deaths of children. As the minister has shown to other committees, relates to Christian organizations. So, you know, obviously we need to do all we can in the health system, but we also need to do things upstream in communities that relates to these basic mortality. What has been found responsibly besides training up the three committees over a fairly long period? I think most of the members know that in 2010, the Ministry of Science was based on the negotiated approach to the weeks. Most of them. Our Ministry of Science on four things. The first is increase between 2010 and 2014, life expectancy. Secondly, is to reduce maternal and child mortality rates. Third is to reduce the burden of disease from HIV and TB. Fourthly, is to improve the efficiency and effectiveness of healthcare. Last year in May, the minister, together with Madam Graca Machel and the former Commissioner of Social Affairs of the African Union, launched two documents that relate to maternal and child health. First is a maternal, neonatal, child and women health nutrition strategy for 5 years, 2012 to 2016. And this outlines basically the major strategies the department will use over 5 years to improve maternal and child health, including women's health and nutrition. And secondly, we introduced a smaller document, a smaller set of interventions, under the leadership of the African Union, and in respect to the campaign for the accelerated reduction of maternal and child mortality in Africa. So these were launched at the same time in KwaZulu-Natal. And this identifies the priority activities that will address maternal and child mortality. The minister also, as our honourable members know, also launched a program of action to improve primary health care, precisely because of the upstream factors that we think need to be dealt with that relates to improving child survival. And these have three streams. First is a group of seven specialists in each of our 15 health districts. And they include an obstetrician, a pediatrician, a family physician, and an internist, together with an advanced midwife, a pediatric nurse, and a primary health care nurse. Now, of course, we don't have only speak for every individual, but we've got about 46% of the districts have at least 3 or 7 in course currently. So we're working quite hard on trying to find people to start all the other courses. Their role, honourable chair, is basically to improve clinical governance, to improve the quality of care in our primary health care facilities and in our hospitals. Because we have still have had a lot of complaints about quality of care in our institutions. The second are school health teams, and I think honourable members know that the president wants to start here in Cullen and so on. And the idea here is to take care of the schools, improve the health of school children, and focus on largely on prevention and promotion, but also includes minor primary health care as well as prevention. And then the third is the municipal ward base of each primary health care. So this is to take on care against prevention and promotion and communities to hospitals. And over the last year, we've retrained 10,000 community health workers as part of the experience. And each municipal team, over time, should have at least one team. And the team is made of about 6 community health workers, some teachers, a health promoter, an environmental health officer, and a professional nurse. Now, honorable members, here are examples of the mobile presidents and the president. Most of the national government has purchased 30 of these, and between now and the end of October, we'll be purchasing another 60, which will complement the mobile friendly provinces. So the next three pictures really show you what a school mobile is. This is an eye care mobile school. The children who have eye care problems can't see properly, and therefore, the barriers to learning will go into this in the eye care. The last one is the dental unit, so they can get the oral health check. So this is the machine, so they can enter into the as well. So these are now going around the communities, and as you can see, these are labeled HIV pilots. So this is also part of strengthening the pilot districts that have been designated as the National Public Choice Pilot Districts. Now, to come back to the campaign on the accelerated reduction of maternal child mortality. Priorities. These are the priorities under the program. And as you can see, all of them will contribute to child survival. And we think that family planning conversation in rise to better pregnancy outcomes and therefore better outcomes with respect to child health. I think all members know that early booking for antenatal care and the improvements in quality of antenatal care is important. Prevention of mother to child transmission of HIV. We've now had 192 obstetric ambulances. These are ambulances that are dedicated to children and mothers. The best are both these. I think it's self-explanatory. I'm sure members also know that. This is the newborn care. I said that we are starting to reduce newborn care to our target of 12,000. Currently at about 14. So we have a series of interventions that are targeting newborn care. It means that these are interventions that include those primary care and also our district hospitals. One thing is clear to us is that our district hospitals are very easy to maintain. If you have treatments.
What
do you mean?
No?
Sorry? What do you mean?
Thank you.
And the report indicated that about 9 children have been injured whilst being exposed, while working in under hazardous conditions in the labor market. And about 183 were reported in 2000. That is an increase on injuries by children who are working under hazardous conditions that they are not supposed to work at because of the housing activity. Now, one of the tools that are available for the department to deal with the issue of child labor? The Department of Labor has the responsibility in terms of the PCA to enforce and deal with issues around child labor. And in dealing with that, they also look to sectors, our sectors, and look also on the children's head, because the children's head and the PCA talk to each other in terms of areas around child labor. We've aligned our child labor enforcement policy between the children's head and the PCA. And labor inspectors have been trained to promote legislation in order for them to be able to pick up incidents of child labor. In order for us to be able to deal with the issue of child labor, we ratified the convention, the ILO convention on work forms of child labor, convention number 182 of 2009. And this convention was ratified in 2000. As a result of that convention, this convention prohibits what we call forced labor, modern labor. It's called modern labor, but it's forced labor in the terminology that people will understand. It goes with commercial sexual exploitation of children, the trafficking of children, children used by adults to commit crimes, and children to work in hazardous work. Now, the convention requires us to take time-bound measures that we take to eliminate the worst forms of child labor, and there's also a time frame by when we intend to do this. We became also signatories to the ILO roadmap towards the elimination of the worst forms of child labor. And as part of the DCA, we regulate the child labor program of action in line with the requirements. This child labor program of action has got responsibility from each department that are involved in the areas of child labor. It could be health, it could be SDPS, it could be justice. They've got part playing in terms of the child labor action program of the country. We also introduced regulations to regulate the working of children, and which will prevent children working in hazardous working environments, especially those that are between 15 and 18. Members should remember that in terms of the Basic Consumer Employment Act and the School Act, children are expected to be schooled up to the age of 15. Therefore, the DCA allows children who are between 15 and 18 to work, because we cannot have a situation where the school act says you should be at school up to the age of 15, and then if the school act allows you to be out of school at the age of 15, the DCA does not allow you to work. In fact, it's a gap where children won't have anything to do. That's not allowed. But although the DCA allows them to work, it regulates where they can work. And the mission is to protect those workers, the children who are allowed to work in those sections. It prohibits the category of work and set conditions of where children may perform. It provides this regulation guidelines for risk assessment and plan of safe work procedures. Now, we'll go into what was our input into the report. UN report on the condition of child labor in terms of Article 32, which specifies reference to applicable minimum wages. As we've already indicated, that the DCA prohibits employment for children under 15 and employment that is inappropriate for persons that age, except for working in the performing arts. There's an exclusion in the DCA for children to work in the performing arts, but those children, there are procedures in terms of how they should work. When many people hear that children under 15 cannot work, they ask the question, how is it possible that children can do adverts on TV, on radio, who are far better than 15? They do not understand that the regulations, if they allow the minister to introduce regulations that allow children who are even below 15 to work specifically in the performing arts sector, and those children under certain conditions, in order to ensure that their training, their schooling is not affected. These regulations also regulate the employment of children, as you say, who are older than 15 in terms of health and safety, and they provide guidelines of the work of the children. That's for also information, the farm worker sector regulation allow children who are 15 years of age, but lesser than 18 years, to work not less than 35 hours a week. And normally, workers are allowed to work 45 hours a week, but in this special case, it's for in the farming sector, in terms of the sector regulation for the minister, children which are about 15 years outside the schooling years, they can work, but not for not less than 5 hours a week. We also put last numbers, statistics in terms of some of the cases that we've had over the years in terms of child labor. Remember, employing children is a criminal case. Ours is to just catch and report them to police and the security and to prosecute. Over the, in 2011, we had one case of child labor in KZN. In the Eastern Cape, with also one case in the Western Cape, the Northern Cape, and then the Gauteng also one case. All of these cases, in most of them, there has not been an outcome yet. In those where there is an outcome, if you look at what we've done, children were united with parents because they were taken out of their environment and allowed to work. And the subpoenas were issued to employers to submit investigation on them to assist with the enforcement of those workers. And if you look at the Limpopo, we still waiting for the decision of the court on those cases. Because they are criminal cases, they take a little bit longer for the system to stabilize them. Thank you. There was no cases in the city. We want to reflect those that there were cases.
Who reports the case?
They said when they catch the case.
What
happened from 2007 to 2015? As I indicated, members, this survey is done over 4 years and is done in collaboration with South Africa. This is in a report we did one in 2006 and another one in 2010. Another survey, all of the 2010, will be coming another 2014, 2015. It's done for all them in 3 to 4 years.
Thank you, Chairman. Concerning the child labor, you see, 2000, from 2000, child labor was, I don't know, many mentioned of child labor. What brings me to my question is, last time there were demonstrations in the Western the Great Fire, there was a lot of demonstrations. And most of the youngsters there, I don't think they were. And you could see that they're waiting. The church thing was, what are you doing about that?
because it's quite recent, it's in 2012, and they were not even 15 years, and you could see the way they demonstrate that they are really, really, really waiting. And one other thing that is really for kids in the Western Cape and what have you about it. I don't know what site it is. It is the last slide. Sometimes you find that parents are allowing them to do it. And when they are arrested or whatever, you deal with the children, and what about the parents who allow them to go anyway? What happened in there? That's what I want to know. And I don't think that there should be law today, but we used to have labor inspectors. I just want to find out whether you still have them in the provinces, or that thing has been abolished. Because if we do have active and visible inspectors, we won't be having children who are working, and there is children working. And the street vendors sometimes, like, I'm from the Northwest Province, you find that they're selling watermelons, and you find that the parent and the young boy, the parent is keeping in the van waiting to be up for change while the young man is selling watermelons. Is it not, what is that? When even during the week, like for instance when you think that you can do that on Saturday and Sunday, but if they are selling watermelon on Monday and Tuesday morning or during the day and school day, is it not helping or children are waiting, and what happens to the parents who encourage you that? Thank you.
I think mine is also related to this. You know, especially in the farm, in the farm, you know, a lot of children, you know, are really being abused there. They are working. And I'm not sure the source of information that we have here is not really good. You know, to say one, I identify really for me, I don't know. But it's not so difficult. I don't know, maybe. When you get information, and then when you get
information. The issue of the demonstration in the Western Cape is very difficult to decide that when people are demonstrating that they are working. Normally, in demonstration, the whole community gets involved, and therefore, in the case that we involve with the farming sector definition, that is difficult to decide because they are involved in a demonstration in support of their parents, therefore their workers. That's the link that we need to make in them. On the issue that you are raising, remember, of parents, the law present talks to employees and employers. That's why we're making amendments in the law to talk to child welfare, not child employment. Now, if you say child employment, it means that there must be an employer and employee relationship. When you say child welfare, it could mean even children at home. If your children, you ask your children to get a wedding, and you invited 300 girls, and you had a child, you got a child who less than 15, and then you request the child to wash the dishes after the wedding. As a result of that washing of the dishes, the child is not able to do her own work. He's not able to go to school. He becomes child labor. Because child labor and child work is defined as the work that affects the upbringing of the child and the ability of the child to go to school. Now, we make changes in the discipline to say a child aware, not only child labor. When you say labor, you mean employment. And that's the change that we make. It will cater for the issue that we have. On the issue the statistics that we're giving, we give statistics in terms of the cases that we've got.
Those are the cases that are within our book. It's very difficult area that we're dealing with. There's no doubt that there is an issue of capacity in terms of the numbers of inspectors. We're not able to put inspectors in each and every sector in order to detect some of these issues because of the cost involved in all of those issues. But on the cases that we've been managed to detect, they were reported to us. That's what we reported. We're not saying those are the only cases that are there in terms of child labor. On the issue that you raised, as I said, of people who are standing along the street, the amendment will deal with that.
Yeah, that's the I think
the issue of child labor, especially in the farm, it becomes difficult for inspectors to start the payment level. Because firstly, if you look at how the farm is located, you first need to make an appointment with the farm owner that are coming. And then by so doing, then whatever could happen. And also, I mean, the fact that, because they know that it's illegal, so they will always tell children not to actually, you know, divulge the information in terms of that they are ready. But I think there's more to do in terms of some of the issues which members have raised. Those are standing up, you know, outside the office, standing whatever. I mean, there's also the guys who are selling newspapers and all this other stuff.
Thank you very much. I know that there is more, you know, to really engage in them, but this is not just what we intended to do. But I would like to thank you, and maybe members will send in other questions to you. But those that were looking for what you can do, but maybe they might be.
Justin, we will also be hosting our National Year in Child Labour on the 13th of June in Mpumalanga. The communication will come once the minister has signed the letter.
Thank you very much, for the community. Thank you very much for the conversation, for your energy. I know that you were already out of your energy, but I wish to thank you for the conversation. Tomorrow we have a lunch meeting to adopt the reform.
Thank you.